get them to ask a question, because let me tell you this, as soon as they've asked the question, they've given you their explicit permission to sell to them, not before. We've got to earn the right to sell.
Welcome to another episode of Selling to Enterprises podcast. This is Zia here, and my guest today is Peter Strokorb, a B2B sales acceleration specialist whose mantra is win more sales faster. Let's hear Peter talk about B2B sales today and how to become better at it. Without further ado, let's get started. Peter, thanks for joining. It's a pleasure to have you on the pod today.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Zia. It's great.
Awesome. So, Peter, for the benefit of the listeners, please tell us about your journey and, connect the dots for us, please.
My story is that I actually grew up in corporate, in the corporate sector, and I've worked for companies like Sony, Canon, 3M, CSC, and Dell. And I also worked with a whole bunch of small businesses. So I've got this unique experience in terms of the corporate sector and the SME sector as well. And I worked in both on the sales side and on the marketing side in various roles in various corporations. And so I've got this insight into what makes marketing tick and what makes sales tick. And I've come to the conclusion that they all only really work really well if we focus on the customer. And so I now teach medium-sized businesses, so mid-market businesses, in terms of how to turn their sales effort around and stop focusing on their products and their services, on what they want to sell and how they want to sell, and measure everything internally and look at the KPIs internally and stuff like that, and instead focus on what happens to the customer. You know? And one key thing that I keep bringing up with all these organizations I work with is that if we start off talking about us and talking about our products, then we're actually not focusing on the customer, and the customer gets turned off. So let me give you an example. Right? So I'll give you a cold call, yeah, and I say, look, you should be really interested in what we do and who we are, and here's our products, here's our services, and here's how many locations in the world we are located in. Here's all our customers and stuff like that. You go, why the hell is he telling me all this, right? What's in it for me? Why should I be interested? So I call that we syndrome. When people say we do this and we have that, they have we syndrome, right? So the only way you get a customer interested, and by the way, we're talking about B2B here, and we're talking about not exactly selling pencils. We're talking about selling something a bit more complex, something maybe with a higher price point. And the decision makers that are involved in making a buying decision in a complex sale, they are all senior executives. And by the way, there's never just a single mystical decision maker that will say, yeah, I'll buy that. We now have lots and lots of committee decisions, and there may be somebody from finance involved in the decision. There may be somebody from IT. There may be somebody from a user's perspective. There may be the CEO may have a word to say about it. And so if we don't focus on their needs individually and say, what do you need this solution to look like in order to satisfy your requirements, then we've lost the deal even before it starts, right? So, for example, The CFO would be interested in what's the internal rate of return, what's the return on the investment for this product or service that we're buying. Right? The IT guy might say, okay, well, we're buying this piece of software or this app or this infrastructure. What's the support like? When something goes wrong from a technical perspective, what will that look like? I, as an IT manager, I've got enough problems. Don't bring me any more problems. Tell me what you're going to do when something goes wrong. Right? A user might say, well, is there going to be a long learning curve? How difficult is this thing to use, right? Will it take me months and months to come up to speed, or will it be quick? So you can see that for the same thing that we're selling, there's different people in the organizations looking at the same thing from a totally different lens, right? So what we need to do is we need to satisfy the IT manager, and we need to satisfy the CFO, and we need to satisfy the end user, and make the CEO comfortable that the board will actually be happy with the decision that they're making, for them to make an informed buying decision, right? And that's really the key. I talk about the old sales funnel versus the new sales funnel. So the old one, the traditional sales funnel where you put leads into the top, then marketing nurtures the leads, gets them ready for the sales, passes them on to sales. Sales then advances those sales, and eventually a deal will drop out the bottom and we'll get paid. Now, that principle, that concept was invented in 1898, not 1998, 1898. And for over 120 years, we've been using a sales process that says, this is how we want to sell to you, Mr. Customer. You better buy from us. Right? So what I said is the pandemic has created an ideal catalyst for organizations to change their ways. People don't want to be sold to anymore. They don't want to be bombarded with spam, or they don't want to be cold called, and they certainly don't want to be asked for a connection on LinkedIn only to be hit up with a sales pitch, right? So we call that pitch slapping, pitch with a P, pitch slapping. what they really want is to be helped, guided, and educated to make an informed buying decision. Now, you can't do that when you start off with a cold call and you talk all about yourself. Right. So we need to have a new sales funnel, and I call it the buyer focused sales funnel, that starts off with saying, who are our ideal customers? Where do they hang out? How do we get to them? When we get to them, how do we engage them in a meaningful conversation? Not just ambush them with sales pitches. How do we engage them in a meaningful conversation? This is the hardest part of the sales funnel, by the way, today, everywhere. Then, once we have the conversation with them, how do we fend off our competitors? How can we make sure that they don't buy from somebody else? How do we win the deal? Very important. Equally important, how do we give the customer such a good pre, during, and post-purchase experience that they will come back and buy more from us? And last but not least, how do we tell those repeat customers to refer all their friends and colleagues and contacts to us so that they bring us more business as well? So if we follow the 10 steps in this buyer-focused sales funnel, then wonderful things will happen for the customer and for us as well, because we will give them a better experience and they will give us a better experience. Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. Actually, you know, thanks for that. And, a lot of highly relevant points, Peter. In fact, the reason I had started this podcast is with an idea that creating a platform for enterprise sellers to kind of learn from others' experiences, right? So this podcast, I'm not only interviewing sales experts like yourself, but I've been also talking to senior corporate executives on the other side who actually buy from us, right? And they have been echoing the same thing. I mean, that's pretty nice. Thanks for doing that, Peter. Peter, quick question. So when did you realize that this is what you wanted to do? When did that thing, this is what I want to do. This is how I want to make the world better. How did that happen?
Okay, so two things happened at the same time, right? I always hated it when sales VPs of sales or sales managers at the beginning of the quarter said to their salespeople, get to know the customer, find out their problems and, build a relationship with them. And then at the end of the quarter, they go, quick, get the deal, close the deal, So you get this dichotomy of messages that says, get to know the customer, but quick, pressure them into making a transaction. Right? I really thought that was disingenuous. And I saw customers actually wait until the end of the quarter before they bought anything because they knew the pressure was up to close the sale and they get a huge discount, right? So it's actually destroying value. The other thing is we are all customers ourselves. We buy things and we know how we want to be treated. We know how we make a buying decision. So how do we do something that's really opposite to what the way that we buy ourselves? It just doesn't make sense, And can I say that the inward looking way of saying, look, this is our sales target. We need to make, 50,000 cold calls to get 50 people that are interested and 5 might buy from us, which is the reality, right? That's just so wasteful. We spam everybody, we ambush them with sales messages and we try to force them to buy something from us instead of engaging with them in a meaningful way. So I actually advocate that we, in B2B, I advocate that we actually reach out to fewer prospects, that we do our homework and we've got them researched a bit better, so that when we do reach out to them, we have a more meaningful connection and more meaningful interaction with them, and they don't feel ambushed either. So it, actually everybody wins if you take that approach. Does that make sense?
Right, that is perfect. In fact, I was listening to one of your customers talking about this recently on LinkedIn, right? Sometime during today's conversation, if you can give us two or three such examples where your customers have really benefited from this, that would be great, Peter. But before we come to that, who do you work with on a daily basis?
Well, look, I work with sales leaders and business leaders in mid-market organizations in the US, in the USA, in Australia, and in the UK. I've actually got East Coast and West Coast clients. It's a bit tougher for me on the East Coast because the time zone difference, but we manage, you know. And I work with them one-on-one because I want them to be the leader in their organization that actually makes a change and creates a better world for the organization and for its customers. So I don't train entire sales teams. I work with the sales leaders and let them be the leader for their people.
So I was always, I have most of my career, I have focused in US. So I worked in US markets, basically North America, Canada, and US. But would love to understand from your side, I mean, since you have worked with clients across multiple countries, continents per se, any key differences you have seen in terms of how people buy and how people
sell? My God, yes. So it's a bit like this. In Australia, we're extremely conservative. You know, the people take a long time to make a decision. What happens is that even to start the conversation, they go, okay, Peter, show us three customers that look like us and where your methods have actually worked, and then we may be interested in talking to you, right? And then you've got to go through the whole thing. And by the way, I have structured programs. So they're either 6 months, 12 months, 6 weeks, 10 weeks, or 20-week programs, and there's a fixed price for that. And I had to do that because if I charge on an hourly basis, they actually don't like it, because the slower I work, the more I get paid, right? And my customers like to know exactly what they're getting, how long it's going to take, and how much it's going to cost. And it's much, much easier for them to make a decision once I do that. So that's Australia. Then UK, even worse. They procrastinate and they have internal meetings and you know, to get a decision out of the UK people is just soul destroying sometimes. Anyway, apologies for anybody listening from the UK. The Americans, on the other hand, are much more gung ho in the sense that they go, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Let's just do it. You know, and it takes a little while for them to come on board and to understand what it's all about. But once they do, they actually make a very quick decision. And I find it really refreshing that they either say, no, not interested, Peter, go away, right? Or they say, yep, let's just do it, send me the bill, right? And I say in sales, it's just as important to qualify a deal out as it is to qualify a deal in, because if you can focus on the deals that are actually likely to lead somewhere, it's much more effective. You're much more productive, right? So it's really refreshing when a customer says, I'm not interested, you're wasting your time here, go somewhere else. You know, I don't actually mind being told to go away from that perspective. But I do make sure that they understand what it is that I'm selling and what's in it for them. What's in it for them personally, what's in it for them, for their organization, and what's in it for their customers as well. And if we think, sometimes we forget about our customers. So if we sell something to a customer and they onsell it to another customer, we got to talk to them about, you know, what effect will that have on your customers, you know, on my customers, so that they can go, oh, if I buy that thing, that this is what will happen to my customers and they'll love me. Oh, that's awesome. I need that. You know? So again, if we focus on the buyer and not on what we're selling, so many wonderful things happen, and the deal closes itself practically. You know, I gave a webinar the other day called "Opening is the New Closing," because we used to have this mantra ABC, always be closing. You know, oh, how many would you like? You know, when can we start? And, you know, what's your time frame? That sort of thing. And now we have the hardest time actually starting a conversation because we all get bombarded on a daily basis with unsolicited sales pitches. And it's actually made the buyers retreat. You know, they actually put their hands up in front of you and they go, stop talking. Whatever you're selling, I'm not interested, because they just want to protect themselves from being ambushed left, right, and center. Right. So the old methods of sending out 10,000 emails hoping that three people might be interested are actually ruining it for every other salesperson out there, because, you know, you're not, guess what? Your messages are not the only ones that these guys are receiving. They're getting bombarded from hundreds of organizations. You know, just look at your spam inbox. You know, it's the stuff that's in there is unbelievable. I get stuff from online casinos that want me to gamble there, and you know, I get people offering me Viagra, I get people offering me, you know, ladies of friendship, say, right, on spam, all unsolicited. They don't know anything about me. They're just spraying it out there, hoping that somebody might be interested. And this is really bad. This is really ruining the game for everybody else, because we're all judged. All salespeople will start to get judged for this. And people will just retreat and say, I'm not interested in talking to anyone. So which makes it then harder for salespeople to reach out and have a meaningful conversation with its customers.
I agree. So that's definitely a big challenge, right? Reaching out to the customers and making them respond to you and reaching out to the right customers. So how do you, what do you suggest in today's world, right? Post COVID, hopefully we are out of this pandemic, but how does getting too little tactical, how do we do it now? Or how should we be doing it, Peter?
Okay. So I've talked about how we should not do it, right? But we should not talk about ourselves and our products and our organization and you know, how wonderful we are. I advise all salespeople, anybody listening here, that at the first point of contact with a new prospect, do not talk about yourself. Do not talk about your organization. Do not talk about your products. Maybe even do not mention who you work for, right? And ironically, I say to salespeople, don't sell. And here's why. Because if you're talking to a senior executive in an organization and you're trying to get them interested, they will give you 30 seconds of their time to decide whether you're wasting their time or not. If you spend 30 seconds talking about yourself, they're going to go, well, there's nothing in it for me, go away. Right. So the key is not to sell to them at that point. The key is to intrigue them, to say something that makes them lean forward and say, wow, Zia, that's really interesting. Tell me more about that. Right. I call that the lean forward moment. So the job for every sales rep when they have a new sales conversation with a new prospect is to get the lean forward moment, get the prospect to lean forward and say, how does that work? How, you know, what where have you done it with other people that look like me? You know, get them to ask a question, because let me tell you this, as soon as they've asked a question, they've given you their explicit permission to sell to them, not before. We've got to earn the right to sell, right? And we earn the right by intriguing them. So you've got to find something that you can say to get them to lean forward and to say, you know, tell me more. And this is part of my 6, 10, and 20-week program where I actually teach my clients what is that one sentence that you can use to get them interested and get them to lean forward and say, tell me more.
That sounds really interesting, yeah. And I'll start using this phrase, the lean forward movement, right? So yeah, I'll start using that too now. I hope it's
Please do.
It's not copyrighted or anything, right? So
not yet.
That's cool.
It might be tomorrow.
That's cool. How do you, if you can walk me through a process where a sales leader approaches you, right? What do you look at? How do you, you know, from there on, how do you ensure that, I'm sure there must be instances where you have also said no to some of the prospects reaching out to you, right? Probably may not be the right prospect. But someone reaches out to you, please walk me through that. How do you decide? How does the process start from there on?
Okay, so I actually drink my own champagne. I use my own process in the sense that I have a I've got an article that talks about why we should look at the buyer-focused sales funnel and get away from the inward-looking traditional sales funnel, and all the reasons why and the wonderful things that happen. So that actually just starts a thought process. In, you know, it just makes them think, oh, actually, what would happen if we did that? So the next thing then is I make a free online self-assessment available to them where they can actually tick some boxes. I ask them some questions online and they can answer the questions. And then at the end, they get a result and it tells them exactly how aligned their organization already is with the buyer-focused sales funnel and where they still have some room for improvement, shall we say. Right? And so the key there is self-discovery. Because if I come to you from the outside and I say, Zia, you're doing everything wrong, let me tell you how to do it right, you would go, you know, go away, Peter, or worse, right? Whereas if you self-discover that there's some better way, then you go, oh, that's my idea, that must be a good idea, right? So psychologically, it's much better if you discover it than if I tell you. So I let people self-discover through this self-assessment process that there's a better way and where they still have gaps in their organization. And then I offer them a free consult online where we talk about their organization and their gaps. And we say, you know, how could you close those gaps? And I actually, in the call, I actually help them to close one of those gaps live just so they can see how I work, whether there's a good fit for us to work together, because you know, it's important that we have an alignment there, and also that they can see live that I can help them and that they will get value from my programs, right? And then the commercial conversation becomes very simple. You know, do you want to spend this much money or not, you know, on this? Is it worth your while? Can you see the outcome? Yeah, can you see what happens? And because they've had this sort of try before you buy experience, the risk for them is actually very low. You know, and very few people say, no, I'm not interested, go away, right? Because they've gone through this process. It was their idea. They now want to put the idea into reality. They need a methodology to do that. You know, they could probably come up with one themselves, but it would take longer. It would distract them a great deal and probably cost them more because their time is precious as well. So I use this process of intriguing somebody, helping them to understand why they need it and where they still have gaps, helping them to understand how I work and that they can actually and demonstrate that they can get value from me. And then they can make an informed buying decision, just like I said at the beginning, to decide whether they want to work with me or not.
And Peter, your customers typically are there any specific industries they are coming to you from?
Great. I didn't mention that. So thanks for the question. The focus I have is on the technology and B2B services sector. And when I say B2B services, I don't just mean IT. I've been working with somebody who runs a chiropractor franchising network. So they're B2B in the sense that they work with other chiropractors, but the chiropractors are B2C, so it's B2B2C. So I've worked with them because they provide a service. I've worked with IT companies, of course, And I've worked with consultants that need to work on their value proposition and on their ideal client engagement, and so it's B2B technology and B2B services organizations in the mid market in the US, in Australia, and in the UK.
And most of the listeners to this podcast are from the technology world.
Right.
So that's perfect.
And I should say, in those organizations I mentioned, I work with them one-on-one. So I either work with the business owner or the CEO or the founder, or with the VP of sales directly.
Great, great. And these are, like you said, a typical 6 weeks, 10 weeks, 12 weeks.
So I found that everybody's in a hurry. Yeah. Everybody wants to get a quick result. Yeah. So there's no point dragging it out. But the reason I've got three different programs is that they do three different things. So the six-week program builds the buyer-focused sales funnel specifically for your organization. So you go through all those stages, like who's our ideal customers, how do we get to them, how do we engage them, and so on. The 10-week program does that, plus it then builds the buyer-focused sales funnel that we've built for your organization into your inbound marketing processes and into your outbound sales outreaches, so that you can actually use that funnel that we've built to chase customers or to attract customers to your organization. That's the 10-week program. The 20-week program does all that, plus I will then give you my personal advice and guidance in terms of how to use that new specific for your organization buyer-focused sales funnel to get into a specific target account. So you may have a lighthouse account that you want to penetrate and you want to win as a new customer. So I will teach you how to use the buyer-focused sales funnel to get into that specific account in the 20-week program.
You know what, since you have started talking about results and things like that, greatly appreciate, Peter, if you can share two or three use cases or success stories where you actually have seen that exponential jump in your customers' sales because of this.
You love to, love to. So, firstly, I should say on my website at peterstrokehop.com, there is a testimonial section where you can see the exact people that have actually given the testimonial. So on a lot of websites, you see they're anonymous, VP of sales at a blah, blah, blah organization. I've actually shown you the real people with their names, and every one of them has agreed to be a reference. So if you actually reach out to them and say, how did you enjoy working with Peter? They will give you an answer. So that's on the website there. Let me give you one specific example, the one that I love the most, and then maybe the one that I love second most. And that is, I was working with an engineering services company in California early in the year. And one of my sales tips was that when a customer asks you for a proposal, what do most salespeople do? What do they do?
You're asking me that question?
I'm asking you, yes. Oh.
What do most people do? Yeah, they jump on and start talking about the requirement and what do you need, how many...
They send you a proposal.
Yep.
Right? So the customer asks for a proposal. You go, yep, here it is, right? What happens after you've sent the proposal off?
Then you follow up on that, set up...
Yeah, the minute you send the proposal off, you've lost control of the sales process. Right, because the power moves to the buyer. They can take their sweet old time now and coming back to you. They don't have to come back to you. It's entirely up to them. Salespeople then go chase. Like,
yep.
Yeah, let's. Have you got the proposal? And what did you think? And do you need any more information? All that sort of stuff. And it makes you look desperate, right?
Yeah.
As a rep. And the customer can go, we've got you by the short and curlies. We can now, take our time and we can squeeze you until the end of the quarter, until the end of the month. Okay. So you don't want to lose control prematurely as a sales rep. So what I advise my client to do is to say to the customer when they say, can you send us a proposal? Is to say to the customer, yes, sure, Zia, we'd love to send you a proposal. But it's really important to us that our proposal hits the mark and it actually gives you everything that you're looking for. So how about we get together at 2 p.m. next Thursday to go through the draft proposal and we can check that it hits your mark. So one of two things will happen. Either the customer says, yeah, that sounds great. Let's meet at 2 p.m. next Thursday. What will that tell you if they do that?
The customer is interested and is serious about this, right? Yeah,
exactly. They're interested. They're serious. They want you to get it right. Right? What happens if they say, no, that's right, Zia. Just send it through.
Then you probably have already lost.
They may need three quotes and you're just one of the two others that they want. So you're just making up the numbers potentially. So you get this great intel just from their response, right? So then there's more to it, but I'll stop here because this is about the customer story. So my customer did this, right? So a customer asked that one of their customers asked them for a proposal and they said, it's really important to us that we get this right for you. So can we meet at 2 p.m. next Thursday and walk through the draft together, right? This was a multi-million dollar project, So the customer said, okay, we'll walk through the draft. They brought their entire executive team to this meeting. They spent 2.5 hours going through the agreement, through the proposal. And they basically helped my customer to write their proposal. Right? Guess how many other organizations they went to and did the same thing with? Zero.
Zero, right? Yeah.
My client was the only one that went to the trouble of letting them help them write the proposal. And after they spent 2.5 hours with the entire executive team there going through the proposal and fine-tuning it, they didn't want to go anywhere else and do the same thing again with anybody else. And they just knew that they were going to get a perfect proposal because they'd worked with the provider on it, right? So my customer won a multi-million-dollar deal just using this one little technique.
Fantastic. Yeah. And they were already invested in it, right? And they will not go anywhere else unless you really screw up bad. But
well, that's exactly right. And the other one is an organization that provides go-to-market services. So they advise other organizations in terms of how their go-to-market strategy for both B2B and B2C. And they're also in California. And they, ironically, as a go-to-market specialist company, their value proposition was all about themselves. And so what I helped them to do is to turn that around. And I always advise when you have a value proposition, so I'm giving you some free advice here, some free coaching, is that when you introduce yourself to your customer, I said, don't talk about yourself, right? But the customer still needs to know what you do and very importantly, what's in it for them, yeah? So I always advise my clients to start the phrase when they introduce themselves with, I'm from so-and-so, right? My customers tell me that this is what they get from us, right? Because then your customer can put themselves into your customer's shoes and they go, well, I want that too, right? And then you can have a meaningful conversation about how they can get that. So again, don't talk about yourself. Talk about what's in it for your customers. So back to the story. In this particular case, we devised a three-word slogan to help customers to understand what these people do and what's in it for us, right? And it was something like, I forget now exactly what it was, but it was competency, speed, results, right? And in those three little words, the customer goes, well, I want somebody competent. I want a result and I would like it fast. Yeah. So interested now, right? So it's the way that you present yourself to the outset, even before a customer speaks to you, is really, really important. You know, we know that the buyer's journey is now 60% completed before somebody actually picks up the phone or sends you an email and wants to talk to an actual rep, because we all do our homework first before we contact anybody. And so you got to stick out from your competitors. You know, you got to make yourself the purple cow in a field of brown cows.
You know, in your opinion, Peter, what do you think is the biggest challenge that our enterprise sellers are facing in today's world? And how do they tackle that? How should they tackle that?
Okay, well, I've said it before. The biggest single challenge is that we know it's easy for us to know who our ideal customers are. It's easy for us to understand where they are. It's easy for us to reach out to them because you've got LinkedIn, you've got all sorts of platforms you can use, right? The single most difficult challenge for a sales rep today is to actually get a meaningful engagement at the first contact. To get the customer to lean forward and say, tell me more, Zia, that's the hardest thing to do in sales today.
So, Peter, I have seen that you are obviously well known. You speak on many circuits and webinars and forums and stuff like that. If you could take a minute and talk about, I know you have also written a few books. Can you tell us about that?
Okay, good. Thanks for the question. I've written a couple of books. They are all available in 13 countries on Amazon and also on the website at peterstrobok.com/books. And the books are actually aimed at medium to large organizations, because what I'm talking about in the books are about how we can give the customer a better experience by having our sales and our marketing functions aligned on the customer. And you know, for those listeners of yours who don't work in multinational organizations, it's a terrible scene out there in the sense that in many organizations, sales and marketing work in separate silos. They don't talk much to each other. The salespeople expect the marketers to produce perfect leads where all they have to do is pick up the phone and get the order because they're so far pre-qualified that the customer just wants to send out their order. The marketers say, well, you know, you salespeople, you still got to do a bit of selling. So here's somebody who looked like they were interested, so follow them up. And there's a huge gap between the two in the sense that what marketing thinks is a sales lead is not aligned with what salespeople think should be a sales lead. And so there's a lot of effort being put in by marketing to generate these leads. And then they see them not being followed up by sales, and that causes a lot of frustration and anxiety and bad vibes, right? So this is not a new phenomenon. This has been around for decades. And the issue has been that everybody agrees that sales and marketing alignment is a good idea. There's nobody in anywhere that says, no, they shouldn't work together, right? The key has been, though, that nobody's told anybody how to do that. You know, there's CEOs that say to the VP of sales and their VP of marketing and say, look, guys, just work better together, right? But that doesn't really cut the mustard. So what I describe in the book is the exact methodology that you can use to start an internal dialogue in terms of, oh, if we did work together, what would be the outcome? What would happen? What would happen for the organization? What would happen for me personally? And what would happen for our customers? And you discover that actually pretty bloody good things happen when you do work together. So again, just like the other example I gave you, it's no good for somebody like me to come to you and say, Zia, you're doing everything wrong. Let me to tell you how to do it right. You've actually got to self-discover that you have an opportunity for improvement, that the opportunity is real, that there is a benefit for going after the opportunity. And then you start asking, okay, well, how can we go about it? So again, I've got a methodology that I call the one team method for obvious reasons, one team. And I call the process of bringing sales and marketing together, I call that smarketing, you know, because I want them to operate as one team. So I want them to get away from being independent silos that don't talk to each other, bridge the gap and help them to talk to each other, and then in the end to become as one team. Like sort of imagine a yin and yang symbol. That's your sales and marketing alignment there. So I've written those two books. The first book was aimed at marketers to say to them, look, you can do a better job helping your salespeople sell more, and then you'd be better recognized. And the second book is aimed at salespeople saying, hey, if you help your marketing team to help you sell more, everybody wins. You sell more, marketing gets a pat on the back for helping you to sell more, and the customer gets a much better buying experience. So everybody wins.
I'll include the links for these books in the description of the podcast. So thanks for sharing that. So finally, you know, before we close for the day, anything that we have missed that I should have asked, Peter, that you feel is relevant for the enterprise sellers today, or any other advice from your side for them?
Okay, so look, the thing I would like to do is make the self-assessment available to all your listeners. It's a free service. It takes them about 10 minutes, and they can identify for themselves just how customer aligned they are in their sales outreaches, right? I was talking about the buyer-focused sales funnel. So I will send you a link that you can pass on to your listeners for where they can, for free, discover for themselves how they can do better in their customer outreaches and how they can create that lean forward moment for themselves.
Fantastic. That's, you know, thanks for doing that, Peter. So again, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for, coming on the pod today. If anyone wants to reach out and say hi to you, Peter, how do they do that? Where do they connect with you?
Look, I'm on LinkedIn. Peter Strokop is my name. Just put me up on LinkedIn, connect to me if you like. You can go to peterstrokop.com. That's my website. Just type into Google Peter Strokop, and I'll come up in several places.
I loved it. I loved it. You know, Peter, thanks for doing this. Greatly appreciate it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to connect with you again on this sometime soon. You know, thanks. Thanks for your time today, Peter.
Thanks for having me on your program, Zia. It's been great to be here.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.